me, all of life seems to be like the process of internalizing energy, translating the energy that we've internalized, and then externalizing it. So that's what today's talk is basically about, the internalization of energy, the translation of energy, and then the externalization of energy. I think that we naturally internalize energy from basically the moment of conception right on up till the moment we cease living as physical beings. And so you can imagine that what we're doing is we're accumulating, that we're internalizing energy as a fertilized egg, and we're growing and we're adding to ourselves, we're adding to ourselves, we're adding to ourselves, and basically translating this energy that we would be receiving through our mothers into muscle, bone, tissue, brain cells, you name it. That's what we're doing with this. Now, part of this process requires us to let go of some of the energy that no longer serves us, and it doesn't take much of an imagination to recognize that the excretion process, or that function in living things, is what that's about. It handles that release of energy that no longer serves us, and it is let go of, and it can be recycled by other forces like Mother Earth, for instance. When I talk about internalization, I'm using that word to represent multiple activities. It can mean eating food, drinking beverages, taking in environmental signals that we would call light or sound or feelings or even a sense of knowing. It also means perceiving the environmental signal and making it about us, that we take it in instead of letting it go fly by. And so that would be internalization as well. So if I were to speak it more simply, I would say that internalization is the act of taking what we hear, see, feel, read, so on, personally, as if it were about us. In perhaps the worst case, everything that we put our attention on would become a reflection of us, and that way we would make ourselves the center of the universe, and that internalization would be a problem for us. If life is about internalization of energy, translating it, and then externalizing it, doesn't it make sense that to think that if I can be more effective at all three of these actions, internalization, translation, and externalization, I have got to become happier, more successful, healthier, right? If those are the skill sets that are required for life, if we were skillful at them, I think we would be healthier, more successful, and so on. I think that's pretty much a given. Distinguishing ourselves from other people and objects and actions is important in order to do mindful internalization. So that means that not everything that we see, not everything that we hear is about us. We would be able to separate and make that distinction. This is about us. This is not about us. This is about somebody else. This is about me. Those kind of things. And we weren't necessarily taught how to do this. In fact, for most of us, we've experienced times in our lives when we didn't have that freedom of choice about internalization of food, for instance. Eat everything on your plate. It's like, well, how about if I don't want to internalize everything? Well, eat everything on your plate because there are people starving in other parts of the world, as if internalizing the food on our plate made them not starve. Most of us could never understand what that was about. And if there were a relative, for instance, that we didn't want to embrace, or they were either frightening or there was something else unappealing about them, then we got instructions, go kiss Aunt Betsy, or go hug Uncle Harold, or whatever, even though everything in our knowingness said, I want to stay away from both of those people. We would have been able to understand and recognize now, looking back, this is why we were confused, because we were told to deny our own feelings, our own knowingness, and our own freedom about internalization. In some cases, we were abused. That is, our boundaries were violated, and we had to internalize stuff either verbally or emotionally or physically, in the worst cases, where we didn't control over that. And some of that confusion results from these kind of statements that we might have heard. This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you when we're about to be spanked or something. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. And then be told after the fact, that doesn't hurt. I thought the pain I was feeling actually did hurt. I guess I was wrong. Or don't be afraid when we're afraid. Don't touch that. Don't look at that. Don't think that. Don't feel that way. All of those things have been said to us numerous times in our childhood. So we're, it makes sense to me, confused and bothered by what do I internalize and what don't I internalize. We're told what to do and not to, what to do and so on. And if we've grown up in a family that continually assigned blame for to one another and to other people outside of the family, for instance, oh, it's this group of people and it's that group of people and it's this religious group and it's that religious group and it's this ethnic group and it's that ethnic group, the tendency is for us to have internalized that blame. Then, because it doesn't feel good, we're going to try to translate it and most likely into blame. And then in order to move that energy, we're going to externalize it as blame. So if you can see how that pattern is established, it's very easy then for us to turn it around and look at our own behaviors nowadays and to notice, I get it. I've internalized this, I've translated it, and I externalized it too. That's the conditions in our lives, in my opinion, are representations of our externalization of energy. I can recall as a child being told that smoking cigarettes would stunt my growth. My parents used to say that. And being tall was an important thing in my family. My mother was tall, her brothers were all tall. And so it was like, oh, everybody wanted to be tall. And so that was held out as being a real, real problem. And if my parents were to talk to me today about this sort of thing, they would use words that I'm using today. If you internalize cigarette smoke, you're going to interfere with your body's ability to externalize its full potential. Then, you know, and this is really what happened to me, is I internalized a couple of different images, one of which was one day in our home, and my home consisted of two adults and seven children. So it was just me and my mother in the house, and I can recall lying on the floor in the living room reading an encyclopedia and turned around, and she was sitting in a recliner reading, smoking a cigarette, and tremendous peace in the house. And then this beautiful billow of smoke came out of her as she was reading, and I went, there, I just internalized the image of peace. I know how you get peace, reading and smoking a cigarette. Smoking a cigarette is connected to peace. The other image and images associated with cigarette smoking that I internalized, and even if my parents expressed it in the words that I just used a few minutes ago, this is going to interfere with my body's ability to externalize its full potential. It would have made more sense, perhaps, but I probably wouldn't have listened anyway. So I smoked cigarettes so I could externalize another image, and that was, besides peace, the self-image of being rebellious, being strong, being powerful, which meant that I was safer, I could protect myself more, and tough guy, wise guy, rule-breaker sort of independent, you know, individual sort of person. That's really what I was looking for when I got involved with cigarettes. And of course, over time, those characteristics are really marketing illusions. They're lies that were promoted and hyped to us. And I recognize that, unfortunately, it was years later That's when I realized that the freedom that I thought I was getting, I was in fact a slave to cigarettes. I had internalized a lie, and so my behavior that I was externalizing was just a continuation of a lie. Goofy. And I think it's the acts of internalizing lies that does unbelievable amounts of harms to us and to those people around us. I will bet that when, if we were to examine our behaviors, examine our habits, particularly as it relates to internalization, what do we take in, what do we make about us, we're going to discover that a lot of these things are ego-driven. And consequently, they have a couple of characteristics, maybe one or both of these. Number one, these habits of internalization that are ego-driven are designed to make us feel bigger. Bigger, big shots, big powerful people, influential people, and also in terms of physical size as well. And the second thing that may be connected to this ego-driven internalization has to do with making other people smaller. So if we can make other people smaller, by extension, we are larger, simply because we reduce the scale of everybody around us. And when we see that kind of diminution going on in our habit patterns that we criticize and fault find and make fun of and other stuff of that sort, we are seeing that behavior in action. A little while ago, I thought of an email that I received yesterday from a political appointee. He was appointed by the governor of Florida to the Senate. And the email yesterday announced that he was now going to run for office now that his term was expiring. And as a Republican, it was really important to him, and he was deeply concerned about government spending, and the government is spending too much money. And he really feels called upon to try to reestablish the correct behavior of government. Less government spending and less government. And I'm thinking he is promoting this idea that governmental spending and spending is the greatest threat to American citizens, which I personally think is total nonsense. But I internalized the energy of that email as a threat to common sense and decency and certainly truthfulness. But this process of perceiving information and energy are identical. And what I did is I perceived it, and then I compared it to my own beliefs about this is the way it should be, and this is the way it shouldn't be, and then I translated it accordingly. And that bothered me. But isn't this what we do all day long, every day? We perceive information energy. We compare it to our accumulated inventory of what's right and what's wrong, what's good, what's bad, and then we put it into one of those characteristics or one of those categories. And we put it into a category of bad or wrong. Now we've created a threat. We've created something that's going to cause us to be upset about it. And if we've activated the stress response by that creation of a threat, just by our processing, it was just an email, then we're going to have it. Excess internal energy. Now, vroom, vroom, I've started to rev my engines because of that stimulation that is going to require me to translate and then externalize that. All energy modalities aim toward reducing the threat index in our inventory of experiences. So if you think of that, if you've got millions of experiences that you've had over the course of your lives, and we have, and we've got those filed away in one form or another, lots of different forms related to faux or not faux, and colors and locations and places and people and on and on and on and on, smells and all kinds of ways of filing that information away. Is that as we increase our deeper understanding of our experiences, we're going to realize that, in fact, they had much less to do with us than with the other people expressing it. Now, if I were to look at that email right now, it's a guy that wants the power and the influence and the money and the benefits of being a U.S. senator. He's not trying to protect the Constitution. He's not trying to protect the people of Florida or any Americans. This is basically self-serving. And when you look at that and see past the appearances of all truth and justice, that facade that's being presented, it becomes clearer, because all the Republicans are basically in lockstep with this idea that government spending is the enemy, and then they vote for tax breaks for, like, oil companies and so on. It's like, who are you taking care of? The people that get them into office is who they're taking care of. And when you look past that, you go, oh, okay, I understand what's going on. And then we don't have to get so upset about it. We don't need to get stressed out about it. I think what we're looking to do in terms of this internalization process is to take another step, is we have an opportunity now with energy modalities to, I'll say, disinternalize previous energies. We could have taken in this energy in the past, and clearly we have over the course of our lives, and then we can do something and we can separate ourselves. We can make a distinction between us and that energy, and we can let it go. We can change our point of view about it, and that is a tremendous power. When we really recognize that what we feed ourselves all day long in terms of what we read, what we think, what we see, what we hear, and what we provide for ourselves is basically an energy diet. What are you eating all day? The 6 o'clock news? Well, you're going to have stress stimulated, because that's what it's really designed to do. And you look at the pattern, and I looked at this a few weeks ago one time, and it was very interesting. Disaster, disaster, some sort of medical miracle, disaster, disaster. And it was very interesting, very clear agenda of stress production and occasional hook of, oh, isn't this great that this is going on the planet as well? But the ratio was 1 to 4. One good thing, maybe, that was really outside the control of the person, and a whole bunch of bad stuff done by other people. Interesting. When we realize that internalization, if we were to compare it to a diet, to our eating habits, then we would go, what am I feeding myself? I need to become aware of what I'm feeding myself every day, all day. Because if we're taking in toxic energy, it's very silly, I think, for us to believe, oh, well, good things are going to come out if I eat toxic energy. I don't think so. I don't think so. Most of us don't have that translation capability to be able to take something really, really negative and convert it into something very positive. That ability exists, but for the average human being, we have yet to develop that ability to translate, which brings me to the second fundamental step in this process of life, translating. It's also what we do every day, all day. But I think we don't really appreciate it fully, so we've got a limited appreciation. I think this is what we do. We bring invisible energy, I'll call that consciousness, we bring it into a physical manifestation. We bring it into physical form with full awareness. And that is really the entire purpose and game of life. That the fact is, we bring invisible energy into physical form. But to do it with full consciousness, full awareness of exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it, that's the game. And if we can become skillful at that, now all kinds of great things are ability, or we have the ability now to manifest in our lives. A child who sees an ice cream cone and says, I want an ice cream cone, is now going to try to figure out how to get that ice cream cone. How do I bring that ice cream cone into physical manifestation? How do I make an ice cream cone appear in my hand? Essentially, when we grow up, that little boy now is a man who sees a cool sports car and goes, wow, That's what I want. I want one of those. That person is now going to try to figure out how he can bring a sports car into physical manifestation. How do I have this thought, I have this mental image, it's invisible, but how do I bring this into physical manifestation? This is, to me, the same idea that a novelist who's got an idea for a story is now, how am I going to bring this into physical manifestation? How am I going to write this book? How am I going to do this? How am I going to put this story on a piece of paper? Frankly, this is what human beings do. I think this is actually what all beings, all living beings do. They internalize, they translate, and then they externalize the energy. But human beings have a tremendous range of perceptions, translations, and expressions. What we internalize is a vast variety that we can control by our awareness. Our ability to translate is also controlled by our awareness, and our ability to externalize, to express this energy that we've taken in, is controlled by our awareness. It really wasn't in Western culture until Jesus Christ came along that there was an alternative translation that was brought into common awareness. Now, there were Christ figures that existed before, people who attained Christ consciousness before Jesus, but we mostly don't know about them. From a Western culture standpoint, that's true. But the idea that we could turn the other cheek is, that was new news. That's a new point of view that we're talking about here. The idea that we can turn the other cheek, which to me means that we can, if we turn our head a little bit, we can get another viewpoint. We can see a situation from another angle. It doesn't mean provide another punching space for an enemy. It's about us seeing things differently. And so that approach says that we could use, with just a little teeny bit of practice and patience, the ability to translate the incoming energy and previously internalized energy into a new, higher form, a new version, which could bring value to us and, by extension, to other people. See it from another angle. Get a new point of view on this. In certain areas of life, you know, we're really, really clear about the need for practice. And in other areas, not at all. For instance, if we see a physical skill, like anything, jumping rope or playing the piano or typing or playing golf or you name it like that, we would all go, that really requires a lot of practice to become good at that. We accept that idea without hesitancy. Yep, oh, I'm totally in agreement with that idea. However, we may not so readily accept that processing environmental signals, which is what our life hinges on, is really a skill of the mental and emotional levels and requires practice and requires patience. But it does. It does. The practice of processing environmental signals effectively is what it's about. We're taught to memorize in our educational system much more than we are told to think and to process information. We're looking for the right answer. We're not looking to expand our awareness and ability to process information, and it's goofy. And so this idea of practicing, processing environmental signals effectively is that we've been practicing it our entire lives, but maybe unknowingly, but it's absolutely important to our health and our success and our happiness, prosperity, the love that we're willing to give, the love that we're willing to experience, all are contingent upon that. And if we realize the benefits of this skill in that activity, minimum health and happiness and success, then all of those things that we desire are so much easier to achieve. It's kind of like you think if navigating through life with my eyes and my ears closed is a good idea? We would say, no, I don't think it's a good idea. The more your eyes are open, the more your mind is open, the more your heart is open, the more your ears are open, more you hold off judgment, we think that's a better way to navigate through life. I want to read a couple of sections from Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. This is letter 4, page 161. I'll skip around a couple paragraphs. True differences arise from what each person gives of himself to this moment, the next moment, and the rest of the day. That willingness to invest energy. I'm skipping a paragraph. Such a person will have contributed life to his environment because the nature of life force is unconditional love and service, work and harmony, giving whatever is necessary for the fulfillment of needs of another. And if we were to think about what Christ is speaking about many times in this book, talking about we reap what we sow, we know that if we're giving whatever is necessary for the fulfillment of needs of another, it says that that's exactly what we're going to reap. On page 164, this paragraph, to reach your full potential, you must realize that neither position nor wealth can limit the power you exercise in the world. Your only limitations are your attitudes and thoughts arising from your attitudes. And for many of us, we've internalized a lot of negative information, a lot of lies, not just that cigarette experience that I mentioned earlier, but that was really just to represent being sold in a very subtle way. Nobody really promoted it to me. It was what I reached out and grabbed based upon my desire for peace and safety and protection and independence. And I chose, based upon my level of awareness, lower forms of information. This is the true ideal, the true aspiration, the highest goal, to understand and experience the reality behind and within all things, giving them their individual being. You may call the reality God, Allah, Jehovah, infinite intelligence, divine mind, or divine consciousness, or the Tao. All these names mean the source of your being, your creative origins. You can have no higher aspiration than this, to understand and experience the reality behind and within all things, giving, maintaining, and sustaining all individual being. This was the goal presented to you by every enlightened teacher who has come to Earth. I love that information. I love that information. And if we can accept the role and goal of increasing the harmony of the energies that we've internalized as we translate it, and then our externalization will be clearer and more rewarding. And now if we can see that our goal is to plant seeds of that harmony of caring and loving and sharing, and we know that we're going to reap that harvest, all good things can accrue, not only to the people that we are being of service to, but in terms of our own harvest as well. Two of the million things I like in the Christ Returns Reveal Startling book, two of the millions of things I love about Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth are these ideas. Number one, that divine consciousness works for us, in us, and through us. Number two, divine consciousness is always seeking to provide the truth of existence to its creations. The truth of existence, as Christ explains in letter 1, growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within a system of spiritual law and order. If the divine is trying to produce those and provide those for us every single minute of every single day, it should take a lot of mystery of what to do. If we ever wonder, what should I do, or how do I get and stay in harmony with God? How about if we align with allowing God to work for us, in only to ourselves and our families, and but other people as well on the planet, and other living things on the planet, the truth of existence, growth, nutrition, and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within a system of spiritual law and order. If we recognize that as our job, as our goal, and as we do that, we are clearly going to be increasing our level of awareness. And that's a fantastic thing. If we choose to see our own internalizations about allowing the divine to work for us and in us, I think we're going to be in a position where we're going to be less afraid, less frightened, less terrorized, and less defensive, less self-protected, and much more intelligent. If we choose to see our translations as our allowing the divine to work for us and in us, we're going to be less angry, less frustrated, less impatient, and less fearful. If we choose to see our externalizations as the divine working through us for our benefit and the benefit of others, then we can take the brakes off our actions. We can stop holding ourselves back out of fear of doing something wrong. Now that we know what the game plan is, help provide the truth of existence for people. Help the divine work through us. That's got to be a lot easier for us. I don't know what the right thing to do. Add love. That's the right thing to do. We can set our intentions at any single as to what we want to experience. And really, if you've got two choices, love or fear, set your intention to experience love. Set your intention to be a conduit of love, to have love work for you, to be able to receive love in the environment. We're going to a friend's birthday party this evening, and you know, most people there I may have met one time, not on a first-name basis with them and so on, so we're essentially strangers to one another, but I can attune my receiver, if you will, to receive love. I can, more importantly, tune my translator and my transmitter to put out love, to be kind, to be thoughtful, and walk into a situation like that. My chances of reaping a harvest that's not loving, mighty slim, simply because I've made the decision to set my intention. I attune myself with that higher vibration, and it's amazing how easily and quickly something like that can show up in your experience. So when I show up thinking that I'm going to be in harmony with the truth of existence and all the elements thereof, when I go to that party tonight, whole different ballgame. Now I know what I'm doing. And that's a huge thing for most of us. You know, everybody knows that at this point that stress is seen as the culprit, and depending on who you talk to, 85 to 99% of all illnesses, stress. And the definition of stress that works is the nonspecific response to a demand placed upon the body. So now I know what the specific response is. It's going to be love in harmony with the delivery of the truth of existence. I'm going there to experience the truth of existence. I'm going there to have it work in me, and I'm going there to have it work through me, the truth of existence. So now my responses are specific. Everything that's in harmony with what I just said is going to be a response I make available to myself. And anything that's fear-based or anger-based or this-based or, you know, anything else that makes me feel self-conscious is going to not be as powerful in my experience tonight. By understanding this process that life encompasses these three steps, internalization of energy, the translation of energy, and the externalization of that energy, I think if we look at it just from that standpoint, all of a sudden we realize that we can choose the highest vibration and value response to every single situation, much like I just described for tonight. But we can do it regarding anything from the minute you hear this, from that point on. We could look at everything that's experienced and seeing it as being in alignment with the truth of existence and God blessing us and using us as a model of its love and using us as a distributor of its love, working for us, in us, and through us. Most of us have never seen an angel with wings. Most of us have never seen a burning bush that was speaking. But we have seen people who are distributors of love and kindness and high vibrations. I think that really is our job. At some point early in everybody's life, your life, my life, our parents internalized an amazement at the miracle of our birth. Maybe they looked at our little teeny toes, our little teeny fingers, and saw those fingernails and fingerprints and the detail there fully formed, which to me is unbelievably astonishing. Every time I see something like that, it's like, wow, that's amazing. And our parents at some time too, maybe only a few times, maybe just only once, if you only had one time in your life where they externalized to us their translation of God's love. That's all we need, is that one time, that one vibration, that one image, that one experience that we can then take, kind of like a farmer with a seed that grows now and that produces more seeds and more growth and more fruit and more seeds and more fruit. We can, if we choose and realize that we have this power, we can internalize those joyful, I'll say energetic experiences, those joyful energetic inputs that we would have received. We can experience them again and again and again and again. Their energy, they're for our use, they're being supplied to us to fulfill our needs, to help us heal, to nourish us, to help us grow, to help us feel protected. And we can do that over and over again, even if we only had one such experience in our childhood. And then our lives will turn into a virtual field of blessings, of all of it being God-given gifts where we belong. And then we can externalize that to other people in our lives and harvest more of the same things that we express. We sow with our seed thoughts and feelings and actions, and then we're going to reap that harvest. And just because we've internalized something that on the appearances, on the surface, looks like a negative experience, we have this unbelievable power as translators to work at it and look deeper and deeper and deeper until, in fact, we recognize the gold or the diamond or the emerald or the pearl at the root of that. Everything at the root of it is God's good. And if we choose, we can be in alignment with it. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from the book Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth, Letter 8. Father, love of life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.